Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 118 of Season 7 of Over a Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Hal Bryan of the Green Dot, not the one you're thinking of, but the economic stuff, the plane stuff, the aerial stuff. He's also another... A bunch of other podcasts, but thank you and welcome back, Al.
That's great to be back, Rob. Thanks for having me, and it's been fun spending the week with you so far.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot about helicopters that I never thought I would ever need to know, and that's great. That's why I have you on. So minute 118 begins with trucks beginning to move out and ends with Zeus getting concerned about smoke. So we ended things yesterday with John miraculously figuring out where Simon was and surprising him and interrupting him at the same time. And, you know, Simon and Katya shooting back at John. And then the alarm has been alerted, you know, among all of the various terrorists around. And we had a whole succession of soldiers take up a bunch of guns and get ready and stuff like that. And this minute just continues with that, where we see people closing up trucks and getting ready to start moving along in their trucks. Guys jump on the sides of the trucks and guys jumping out of the trucks. And they're all just like, I don't know if there's a better word than saying scurrying. Because that's all they're doing here. They're scurrying around, jumping back and forth. If you look at it, it really looks as if when McTiernan made this, he said, you know, let's just make everyone look really busy. You know,
right?
It doesn't matter what you're doing. Jump back and forth. Jump this way. Jump that way. You know, you have guys. You're jumping on trucks and jumping off trucks. Like, what's the plan here?
The whole jumping on and then jumping out, like jumping on makes sense. Okay, everybody, we're getting out of here, but then somebody's jumping off. Was he on the wrong truck?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, I'm not part of the lacrosse team. I'm supposed to be one of the Jesuit priests. You know, I don't know. Yes.
Oh, sorry, wrong truck.
That's right.
Oh well.
And then we hear John scream, "He's under us right now! Come on back around! Come on back around!" And, we get some nice helicopter maneuvers here. It's just very funny that, John, all the way from up in the helicopter, is trying to direct traffic as to what they need to do and where they need [S2] Right. [S1] To go and stuff like that. I mean, you would know better than I would how well you can really see from that distance.
Well, yeah, I mean, on the one hand, that would arguably be the only real role for a helicopter in a case like this is to direct the people on the ground. But, you know, the helicopter's maneuvering like mad, the one with that McClane is in, you know, it's maneuvering like mad and there's gunshots and chaos and everything else. It's hard to imagine, you know, you could ask yourself, okay, why wouldn't this helicopter just go up another several hundred feet, you know, out of the range of the gunfire, truly get an almost literal bird's eye view of the situation and be telling everybody on the ground where to go. But again, that's not quite as exciting a movie.
Okay. But in that type of situation, it probably shouldn't be John who's doing that. It should probably be,
well, sure.
Someone who actually knows what they're talking about, I guess you could say.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It should be, well, and as we were talking about previously, it probably should be the Mounties, you know, not a semi-suspended NYPD detective here who's come from another country. But hey, who'd watch that movie?
They're not part of the stars, so give it to the star to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a little I guess that's the type of thing that you could expect from a movie like this and this type of franchise. Makes sense.
Yeah. I don't want to get ahead of us, but the Gazelle, the helicopter that Simon and Katya are in, the fact that it starts up inside and then takes off inside the building and then goes out through that narrow area is actually really cool.
Do you think it's accurate? Do you think you can do that with a Gazelle?
Well, I mean, I think it's accurate because I do think we're seeing it truly being done here on screen. And this, you know, it's too good. It wasn't model work. And certainly in 95, we didn't have, you know, really any majorly credible CGI. Right. Under the circumstances, you know, you're a terrorist running for your life. You're not putting safety and regulations very high on your list of priorities. It makes for a cool visual, and just as I say, you see it start up inside and then come kind of roaring out. You know, not something you would do sort of as standard procedure. You tend to wait until your aircraft is outside of a building before starting the engines and things. But I still love it. It's cool.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're going to back up slightly. So we then hear Zeus say, "That's right, run, motherfuckers." And it's very interesting. You see that he has blood dripping down his chin and on his eyebrow. And he has like this towel around his neck that's got blood on it and stuff like that. Like, yeah. You know, I guess somehow he bit his lip along the way or something like that with this. Because you think they would have cleaned him up at this point, you know, if he'd been there.
You would sure think so. But again, I think they're stressing that these guys haven't had 2 seconds to clean that's up right. or do anything else. You know, as you pointed out, we're reminding everybody that this is all happening at a million miles an hour right now.
That's right. And then John says, "Zeus, what have we got on your side?" And Zeus goes, "Looks like roaches with the lights coming on." Yeah, so it's nice the way that they have this back and forth between them. And then we see Simon jump onto one of the flatbeds as everyone is scurrying around him, running around. And then both he and Katya they move towards the helicopter itself. And, you know, you can see that Simon is pissed at this point. And one of them, I guess his mechanic that we talked about the other day, says to him, "Are we going to Nova Scotia?" And he goes, "You go with the trucks. I have something personal to finish."
Yes.
And then he takes out the machine gun, and she gets ready. And then he goes, "Let's go to work." Which is interesting the way that they do this. I mean, and as you were talking about, a truck comes out of the warehouse, and we see that it is followed by the helicopter, which is already being flown and hovering within the warehouse itself. So it shows that Katya must be a very good pilot to be able to do this type of thing the way that she's doing.
And interesting to note too, you obviously called her out as the pilot, which is correct. And most in almost all, if not really all, fixed wing aircraft, if you do have two seats side by side, the pilot in command, or even in some cases, if it's just a single pilot, will sit in the left seat. And in almost all helicopters, with a couple of notable exceptions, for whatever reason, I've never dug into it, but that's reversed. You've got the pilot in command sitting in the right seat. So, you know, we'll use that as slang. It's like, you know, "Hey, I was really lucky. I got to fly one of these airplanes." And it's like, "I even got the left seat." You know, when you say left seat, that means something. I got left seat time and something like this. For whatever reasons, I'll have to dig into it one of these days about why it was that for most helicopters, with the exception of the Robinson R-22 and R-44, as I understand it, it's traditionally flown from the right seat if you only have a single pilot.
Interesting. That's very interesting about that whole thing. Like, did you know, yeah. I mean, I've obviously you said that you don't know why it's switched on a helicopter and that the pilot sits on the right instead of the left, but do you know the reason why a pilot usually sits on the left? In a plane.
Yeah, it's tempting to just say, well, because that's, you know, how the way they've always done out it. and that's, you know, the way they've always done it. It may not be more complicated than that, although I suspect there is some interesting choice made way back when, but Certainly, most of the earliest airplanes, if they were if they did have two seats, they were tandem. They were sort of fore and aft, rather than side by side. Now there's some exceptions there with like the Wright Brothers Model B, some very, very early exceptions. But by the time we get into the early biplanes and things, are almost always sort of fore and aft, and then it's some of the bigger and heavier airplanes that come along and start introducing the concept of that side by side seating.
Right.
I think in a traditional airplane, you've got shared throttle. If it's a two seat side by side, you might have a shared throttle quadrant in the middle. That is pilot in command, so you're manipulating the flight controls like a yoke with your left hand, and then doing throttles with your right. But if you're flying from the other side, you do the opposite. So, and either one is feels pretty normal and is something that any pilot can get used to. So, right now, I'm just going to say, well, we've always done it that way, and then they decided to do it differently in helicopters. But I know there's a more interesting reason than that, and I'll have to dig into it.
Well, could it be a similar reason as to why, when at least in most of the world, the driver in a car drives on the left side also? Because then you have your right hand to be able to do the shifting. That, because most people back then were thought of as only being, right-handed.
Yeah, that's a good point. And interesting, I've driven right-hand drive cars with manual transmission, and so steered with the right hand and shifted with my left. And it was interesting because I had a ton of fun doing it. It was a really fun little car. It was a 67 Morris Mini that we were thinking about buying. And I had no trouble adapting to it until I started thinking about it. Until I said to myself, wow, I thought this would be hard, but it's really easy. And then the next thing you know, I couldn't coordinate my left hand with the clutch to save my life. I mean, I might as well have had just big spaghetti arms or something. So, but that's as plausible a reason as any. Perhaps there's, I can't think of it. Maybe there's some nautical explanation too, as so many of those traditions carried forth into aviation. But there you have it.
Interesting. Okay. And as the helicopter flies out of the warehouse, as you described earlier, we see that Simon, or at least his stunt double, is standing on the skiff itself.
Yeah,
And
he's hanging out just truly hanging out the side of it. And interesting to this, Gazelle has a another crazy bright spotlight as well, which for a sort of paramilitary bad guy helicopter, a light would be kind of de rigueur. But yeah, just Simon's just hanging on out there, and he's he's got his personal business to settle, as he said.
that's right. That's right. I bet at this point he's kicking himself that he didn't take care of this earlier in the
Right.
movie.
I had so many chances.
That's right. Screwed up every one of them. Maybe he's saying to himself, I should have listened to Targo. Oh
Right.
well, he's sleeping with the fishes, but he was right. So, oh well, what can you do? And at this point, the helicopter starts flying out. We see that John and Zeus are using their spotlight to watch the police capture at least one truck at a roadblock, maybe more. You'd think that they would have had an escape plan. They were, I think they were a little too overconfident here.
Right.
I think that's what it comes down to. So I don't know, and we see Zeus is really happy about all this, and he goes, "That's right, run, motherfuckers! The exterminators are here."
Exterminators, of course.
That's right, and then Simon begins to shoot at the helicopter, and ends up hitting the helicopter at some point. And we get a zoom in on Zeus as he hears these shots coming in, and then we see that there's smoke starting to come out, and he goes, "What the fuck? Oh, shit. What the fuck is this smoke back here?" I think at this point Zeus is rethinking the fact that maybe he shouldn't have taken this little trip.
Right. Yeah, he's had a lot of chances to sort of second guess his choices to go along. It's just, but you'd almost think he's got to be sitting there thinking, okay, never mind. Can this helicopter that I'm in just land somewhere and let me out, and
That's
you guys
right.
just finish this without me?
That's right. He's gotten too
But
much
again.
in. The adrenaline of the day has given him too much to want to do at this point, I guess.
Right. Exactly.
And again, we still see the blood on his lip and stuff like that. You'd think he would at least take the few seconds to wipe it each time. Maybe that's why there's all the blood on the maybe it's constantly bleeding, and that
That could be too.
And no matter how many times he wipes it with the with the towel that he has around his neck, it doesn't really do any good with the whole thing.
Yeah. As you're looking at both Zeus and McClane in the helicopter, just really quick, it's worth pointing out that they are wearing, if you notice, the green headsets with the DC on them, and that's a company called David Clark, which has been around since the mid-70s. I've often wondered, why their headsets are green. I've never found a satisfactory answer beyond the fact that because everybody else's are black. So they chose that green color. It's very, very distinctive. They're very, very popular, and they're one of the top, and certainly probably the most ubiquitous aviation headset manufacturer out there. And as I recall, I think they were one of the first to really do special headsets and equipment for helicopters. Not just fixed wing airplanes, but anyway. If you wonder if those green headsets make sense, they do, and they're quite prominent, especially in the helicopter world, but certainly in fixed wing aviation as well. And they're a beloved brand, have been around for what, almost coming up on 50 years now.
Oh wow. Is that the kind you use?
I have one pair of David Clark's. I currently tend to fly more with Bose headset, but
Is that
both,
just because of comfort?
wonderful products. A little bit because of comfort. I find just the Bose, the headband, and the and I personally I think I like the noise canceling in the Bose a little bit better than what I'd had in the David Clark. But both, absolutely terrific products, and would happily fly any day with either of them.
Okay. Again, as far as, I'm assuming as an aviator, as far as you're concerned, as long as you have headphones that work, that doesn't really matter either way. What color they
It
are, or what
doesn't,
brand, if that's what you
yeah.
got, that's what you're going to use.
But there is a lot of, obviously, yeah, you'll take what you're given, but if you're buying your own, there is a lot of brand loyalty as well. And I would say that's arguably truer with David Clark than just about any other company, and just because they stand out because they're distinctive, and how they look, and it's like you can always tell, and it's like, and their customer service. I would say this is Bose as well, but the customer service at David Clark is just amazing. I've had friends who've had a headset for 20 years, and then, some of the foam has started to decay, and the mic boom is a little bit loose, and things, and they will send them to David Clark and say, "Hey, can you kind of give me a tune up?" And I don't know if this is policy or not, but I hear all the time about them completely refurbishing the headset and sending it back and not charging anything. So, your mileage may vary. I can't promise that on behalf of David Clark, but they really are well known for taking such great care of their customers.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, basically what I was able to just find out right now, first of all, you said David Clark is 80-year-old, is a 50-year-old company. It's been 80 years.
Yeah, so they've been around for a long time, but I think the 1975 was when they did their first specific headset for at least for general aviation pilots.
Right.
So they were into all kinds of things, and they've done space suits
Yeah, I was
and
just about to
gear
say
like
that.
that
Yeah,
as well.
And I was trying to find why, you said that they're green and you don't know the reason why. And the only reason I was able to find this is because they want to be different. Their company is distinctively green.
That makes as much sense as anything, and it certainly worked. I mean, if you see aviation headsets in a movie, most of the time, unless you get a really close look at it, all you're going to know is that is it a David Clark headset or not? If you get zoomed in close enough to see a logo or something, and there's some headset companies that use a bit of silver and things like that, but I think anybody would argue with the fact that, David Clark has that area cornered in terms of just being instantly recognizable. Yes, indeed.
So, in other words, you're saying when you watch
All
movies,
right.
you look to see if you look to see the color. You say, "Oh, it's a green one." If
Absolutely.
okay, and
I don't think I'd bore anybody to death by like calling it out, but there's a certain little a satisfaction of knowing. It's like, oh, okay, I know what kind of headset that is. It is not useful information ever, except maybe until today, and you can argue that, but otherwise, just a thing to know inside your head.
Yeah, exactly. That's just okay. I'll have to keep that in mind when I see headsets in movies and say, "Oh, okay, Hal told me that." It's if it's if it's green, it's David Clark. If it's not, it's something else. That's more or less what it comes down to.
Exactly.
Okay, very cool. So do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I don't think so. I think we've drained it of its life.
Okay, great. So once again, we have nothing to talk about with the script because there is nothing in the script about this that goes on here. But every Wednesday we have a segment called Jesus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Samuel L. Jackson performances. So Hal, why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up?
All right. this one was fun because it was a little bit of the as I dug into it, it was a little bit, oh, that's right, that was him, or he was in this. So starting with number five, he played, and I had to look up the character's name. I'd completely forgotten, but he played a character named Stax in Goodfellas. And Goodfellas is a longtime favorite film of mine. Then of course, Mr. Hold on to your butts, Arnold in Jurassic Park. So Robbie Jackson in Patriot Games. So that's the second Tom Clancy movie that's made my lists this week. Then Nick Fury, kind of in general across the MCU, but I think in particular the early MCU, just where things were really getting established and it was clear they were laying the groundwork for something huge.
Okay, do you want to pick one of them though?
Boy, maybe well, I guess I'll have to go with Captain America, the first Avenger. It's not a, we don't see him until the end. But it's a great segue to say, okay, that Steve Rogers has woken up, he's part of this larger world. Plus, that was directed by Joe Johnston, who is the reason that we're doing the October Sky Minute podcast, and he's been on the show with us there. So a little shout out to Joe.
Okay.
And then the number one for me was voicing Frozone in The Incredibles in the sequel.
Well, he was in both Incredibles. He was in the
Yeah,
first
as
one
I said,
also. I think Incredibles
Incredibles and
and
the
the sequel.
sequel.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So, and I think number three was just announced as we're recording this too. So I'm assuming he'll turn up in that one, but we'll have to wait and see.
We will definitely have to wait and see for that. All right.
Yes.
Cool. So, Hal, why don't you once again tell people where they can find Hal Bryan?
You can find me on social media just under my regular old name. Otherwise, you can always go to rocketeerminute.com or search for the Rocketeer Minute and wherever you consume your podcasts and find my host Jim, our friend and co-host Jim O'Kane and I deep diving into that film. As we're recording this one, we're quite a ways through the production and release of the episodes of the October Sky Minute, so another Joe Johnston picture based on the true story of Homer Hickam. So those are the big areas where you're going to find my voice in the world of pop culture, although I've popped up on some of the other Movies by Minute podcasts here and there. And then if you want to hear me with my work hat on, talking about aviation and airplanes and things, you can find me frequently, although not on every episode, of EAA's podcast, The Green Dot. And as we discussed yesterday, if you tune into The Green Dot and they're talking about banking, you've probably grabbed the wrong one, but it is a similar name with a very similar logo out there. But look for EAA as The Green Dot, and we'll talk airplane stuff.
All right. That is excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.